That's a pretty challenging bit of work to catch up to those minnows in the water, because they can move pretty darn fast. Thank you, Jaden, for that. And we've got a couple more reports. We'll get to those in the next hour. Coming up at about 7:45, we'll have some more of those. Of course, stay tuned. In 20 minutes or so, we'll have the full phenology report, my observations for the last week. Right now, it's time to tell you that this is 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker, celebrating 50 years of people-powered radio in northern Minnesota. You can join us at KAXE.org. And I want to tell you that we receive support from the Minnesota State Fair. It's the Great Minnesota Get-Together, 12 days of food, entertainment, rides, animals, and family fun starting Thursday, August 27th through Monday, September 7th. More at mnstatefair.org.
It's going to be mostly sunny today with highs near 70. Southwest winds 5 to 10, could gust up to 20. Mostly clear overnight with lows 47 to 52. West winds 5 to 15. And tomorrow, Wednesday, sunny with highs in the mid to upper 70s. Overnight, 54 to 60 degrees. The Up North Report.
Please, yes. We receive support from the Buckhorn on Caribou Lake, featuring 5 handcrafted log cabins in the Chippewa National Forest just north of Grand Rapids, offering fishing, swimming, and hiking on site. Rates and information at buckhornoncaribou.com.
For KAXE News, I'm Larissa Donovan with the Up North Report. The Lake of the Woods County Sheriff's Office reports a woman's body was found after a search of a county park Friday. Deputies responded to a reported abandoned vehicle at Clemenson Rapids Park, about 8 miles east of Baudette, that afternoon. Baudette Fire and Rescue personnel located the body of 64-year-old Blossom Twielkowski of Baudette almost 3 hours later. She was the registered owner of the reported vehicle. In a news release, Sheriff Gary Fish says the incident remains under investigation pending a full autopsy. An Itasca County judge granted a lighter sentence than guidelines call for on Monday in the criminal vehicular homicide case against Cynthia Cindy Martin of rural Grand Rapids. Chelsea Perkins was in the courtroom.
Both the state and defense requested the downward dispositional departure with about 45 people in the courtroom. They say 66-year-old Martin is amenable to probation, has accepted responsibility for her actions, and has the support of friends and family. More than 35 support letters were entered into the record, including those of DFL politicians who have known Martin over her time in local party leadership. The presumed sentence for someone with no criminal history is 4 years in prison. The attorneys asked Judge Heidi Chandler to sentence Martin to 364 days in the Itasca County Jail. Martin will also serve jail time on every 4th of July holiday for the next 4 years while on probation. Martin hit 19-year-old Carter Hathcock on Highway 169 near Nashua over the 4th of July holiday in 2024. She left the scene and did not check to see what she had hit. Hathcock died because of his injuries. The teenager's father, John Hathcock Jr., gave a victim impact statement in the courtroom. He said his life and the lives of Carter's other parents, 14 nieces and nephews, and Carter's son were destroyed by the incident. He asked the judge to allow the case to go to trial before returning to the gallery in tears. Martin also spoke while crying to express her condolences to the Hathcock family, saying she thinks of Carter and their loss every single day. She said, quote, "I should have stopped. I should have done more. I deeply regret that decision." Judge Chandler expressed sympathy for Carter's family and noted the difficulty of the case for both prosecutors and the defense. Chandler says she believes Martin is regretful and has shown she meets the criteria for a lighter sentence. This comes despite a pre-sentence interview with Martin that the judge says cast some doubt on her acceptance of responsibility and left Chandler, quote, flabbergasted. Martin was remanded into custody to begin serving her sentence at the hearing's conclusion. Chelsea Perkins, KAXE News.
The Detroit Lakes School Board adopted a neutral stance on political issues at a recent school board meeting. The Detroit Lakes Tribune reports the formal motion ordered the removal of all materials not funded, sponsored, or authorized by the district at all school buildings. and specifically referenced items such as, quote, rainbow stickers, flags, and buttons. The rainbow flag is commonly identified with the pride movement around LGBTQ plus rights. The American Civil Liberties Union of Minnesota responded to the district superintendent and board chair over the weekend, writing the ban will likely, quote, create a hostile environment for students in Detroit Lakes public schools. The nonprofit's letter encouraged the board to reverse the ban and respect the constitutional rights of students, teachers, and staff. Bemidji area schools took a similar stance in the 2023-24 school year. The Hubbard County Food Shelf is working toward a new building after its board raises $2 million. The food shelf's existing building in downtown Park Rapids is small but delivers nearly twice as much food as the nearby Purim Food Shelf, which has a much larger building footprint. The Park Rapids Enterprise reports the proposed new building would allow for more storage of donations. The new space would also allow food shelf clients more of a grocery store style setup so they can select their own items. After nearly 40 years of serving the community on an all-volunteer basis, the Hubbard County Food Shelf is also exploring the possibility of having a paid director with a larger pool of volunteers. The org has raised more than $1 million to date. That's it for the Up North Report. Find more of our stories and photos at KAXE.org, where you can also find content from our music, phonology, and morning show teams. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Larissa Donovan, telling the stories of Northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report on KAXE is sponsored by Woodland Bank, dedicated to serving local businesses, families, and nonprofits in our area since 1920. You can find more information online at woodland.bank.
It is 7:06. Coming up, we've got more news from National Public Radio. We are hearing an update on the fires in Spokane and also the effects of the cyclospora, the parasite. There have been two deaths reported in Michigan. We'll hear more about that. That's the lettuce?
Lettuce, yes.
Okay, all right. That's John Latimer. I'm Heidi Holton, giving each other the
salad?
Eye.
That's eye what there. My food eats.
Yeah. There have not been any in Minnesota.
No. That's because none of us eat salads.
Unless there's Snickers and whipped cream
right.
in there.
Yeah, there you go. Those salads are acceptable. No, I'm joking, but it is. And boy, I can't imagine. Now, I did hear that their immune system, the people who passed away, had compromised immune systems, so they were in a weakened state. But it's still nothing to be fooling with. And
Yep. Boy,
the idea of having diarrhea for more than a week is taxing.
Yeah.
What have you done this weekend? Well, I sat in a small room and looked out the window. We receive support from Beltrami Electric Cooperative, your Touchstone Energy Cooperative, providing energy to keep the lights on, coffee hot, and batteries charged. Connecting communities and powering life in northern Minnesota for more than 85 years. More at beltramielectric.com. Support for KAXE comes from UPM Blandin, a provider of renewable material solutions with a focus on sustainability and innovation. Additional information is available at upm.com.
I'm looking at the University of Minnesota Extension website, where they're answering a question from July 23rd was their latest update on if we should be concerned about cyclospora in Minnesota. They said the outbreak is only associated with iceberg lettuce and no Minnesota-grown produce has been linked to the outbreak. And a reminder that cyclospora is not spread from person to person, that we should all continue enjoying fresh produce while following good food safety practices and monitoring recalls. And Minnesota fruit and vegetable farmers primarily use well water to irrigate vegetables. That water is very unlikely to contain human feces that would carry the cyclospora parasite.
Oh, lovely.
I got to say that word today. Yay.
I'm encouraged that it's only iceberg lettuce because mm-hmm. I never eat iceberg lettuce. I eat romaine. I occasionally eat kale. I have to be tricked into it.
Mm-hmm. How's spinach for you?
Spinach is okay green, but like the old in the can cooked spinach. I mean,
or a box.
I mean, why not put your face in the wading pool or the reflecting pool and eat the algae? Yeah. Nah, thanks.
Yeah.
I like them fresh and green. That's how I like my leafy vegetables.
Today, we're expecting in our weather mostly sunny skies, highs near 70, southwest winds 5 to 10, gusting up to 20, and mostly clear tonight, lows 47 to 52 degrees.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep in Washington, D.C.
And I'm A. Martinez in Culver City, California. Authorities in Spokane, Washington, have a man in custody on arson charges in connection with the Old Trails fire. It's one of three out-of-control wildfires that have burned hundreds of homes. We've got NPR's Kirk Sigler on the line from Spokane. Kirk, tell us more about this arrest.
Well, the sheriff's office says it's arrested a suspect, a 37-year-old Spokane man. He's a convicted felon. It's part of their investigation into the origins of the Old Trails fire. It's the most destructive wildfire of the three burning here in and around the city right now. The suspect's name is Aaron Farinacci. He was arrested, we're told, without incident, being charged with first-degree arson. And this is a significant development. I mean, combined, these three fires have displaced tens of thousands of people since last weekend, which is just extraordinary for a city of this size.
Now, you're across the street from the downtown Spokane Convention Center. That's been transformed into a Red Cross shelter.
Right. There have been dozens of people sleeping inside on cots. There's just a lot of need. They're looking to expand the shelter. And it's also not just residents having to flee these neighborhoods. We're talking about the evacuation of businesses, the entire VA hospital campus. You know, I've been watching people coming in here on buses from nursing homes, elder care facilities. I met Charlie Patrick, who's 54 and disabled, and she's struggling with the dense smoke here in Spokane. It's brutal. And just listen as she chokes back tears, saying she doesn't know if she has an apartment to even go home to.
I hope so, because I don't want to be homeless. I hope it's still there. I have a lot of memories, pictures and stuff of my family that I can't get back.
Wow. Any idea when people might be allowed back in?
Well, some have just to check on things. It could be days, though, maybe weeks. It just depends on what these fires do. It's a very tenuous situation. One minute, the winds will pick back up. They'll shift direction and start threatening neighborhoods again. You know, these are the major urban wildfires we've come to dread and know all too well. It's not the level of destruction just yet, like we saw in Los Angeles last year, but it's a big worry here in Spokane. You've got fires that started out in the wildlands outside the city. Wind brings them into these neighborhoods. And the structures themselves, the houses, just create the fuel for the fires to spread. Longtime locals like Deborah Curran are shocked. You know, until this last weekend, the idea of evacuating from a wildfire in the city hadn't really been on her mind.
Obviously, we've had wildfire seasons a lot, and I never, because we live so inward in the city, I never ever imagined us having to be a level 3 evacuation.
Yeah, and she sounds exactly like someone who has lived in Altadena or in Palisades, might have thought, in the last couple of years. But given the Western drought, I mean, is this on the radar of city officials?
Well, here, fire officials have been warning about this and worried about this very thing happening for years. I mean, I remember being up here a decade or so ago doing a story about them planning about this very situation happening. And like a lot of American cities, even here in the Pacific Northwest, Spokane's been built out into what's known as the wildland urban interface. You've got these dense stands of ponderosa pine forests next to the gas stations, the mall, the Costco, and they're just towering their presence in so many neighborhoods. And right now, with climate change and coming off the winter that we just had, the extremely dry and warm, these forests and brush are just dry and flammable. It's only being made worse by climate change, and everyone across the region is worried right now, and it's only early August.
That is NPR's Kirk Sigler in Spokane, Washington. Kirk, thanks.
You're welcome.
Health officials in Michigan say two people have died as part of the outbreak of cyclosporiasis. That's the foodborne illness that has affected people across this country. Michigan has more than 11,000 reported cases, more than any other state, and almost 200 hospitalizations. Kate Wells is following all of this for our partner KFF Health News. Kate, good morning.
Good morning.
What have you learned about the two people who've died?
We don't know a lot at this point. We know that these were both patients who had underlying health conditions, that they may have been impacted by cyclosporiasis and dehydration. We also know that they both got sick before the mid-July recall of lettuce from Taylor Farms. That's the California-based grower. The state health officials are also stressing that cyclosporiasis is not generally life-threatening, that these kinds of deaths are rare. We do want to be careful, though, at this point, because we just don't know to what degree cyclosporiasis was a factor in these deaths. But we are talking about an illness here that, if it is not treated, it can be really prolonged. It can recur after it seems like it's over. And of course, the biggest impact are on the most vulnerable people, infants, older adults, people with compromised immune systems.
I'm just listening to little bits of what you're saying there, where you say that these were people with underlying health conditions. I guess that is why authorities would emphasize this is not necessarily a fatal disease. These were people who are on the edge to begin with, is what they're saying. Is that right?
We don't know. We're getting very little information at this point. It's not unusual that the people who would die from a foodborne illness would have an underlying health condition, but I mean, that is a lot of people we're talking about here with compromised immune systems, and we just do not have a lot of information about these deaths right now. We do know that there are several outbreaks happening at this point. They're not necessarily connected to each other. The FDA says Michigan's part of a 9-state outbreak, but we really have just got local public health nurses here walking through with people everything that they have eaten in great detail. I mean, we're talking about going back 2 weeks to when these symptoms started, and just putting enormous number of hours into trying to trace the source here.
Yeah, which is challenging. You said that this 9-state outbreak is linked in part to lettuce, but these people who died seem to have become sick before they could have eaten the lettuce. So is there anything really known about where this parasite is coming from?
So they could have eaten the lettuce. We don't know because they were sick before of the recall.
Oh, before the recall. Got it. Go on.
Before the recall. Yep. And some people, they've been avoiding lettuce. Some people have been, avoiding Taco Bell. There's only been one FDA-linked voluntary recall at this point. That is the Taylor Farms one. That's the iceberg lettuce that was grown in Mexico. It was then sold at stores like Walmart and Taco Bell, and it was distributed under a bunch of brand names in at least 27 states. But that does not give us a clear answer for what's causing this in all of the other states. I mean, we've got 45 states with cases at this point. And at the state level, you've got health officials that are saying don't rule out other possible sources here. You're seeing North Carolina mention parsley, cilantro. I think it just feels very confusing to a lot of people now, including health officials.
What are health officials telling people to do? How can people protect themselves, if at all?
Oh, well, so people here in Michigan are telling health officials here are saying, look, this does seem to be linked to the lettuce, but they're not ruling out those other possible sources, and they're continuing to do these kind of in-depth investigations with each case, trying to figure out what some common threads could be.
Okay, Kate Wells with our partner KFF Health News. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
This is NPR News.
It is 7:18. Thanks for tuning in to People Powered KEXE, where you get a mix of national news coverage and local news coverage, like what's coming up, the news of nature from John Latimer. I'm Heidi Holton. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, it's going to be a good day. We're going to review the month of August and bring you the highlights. And then we'll talk a little bit about the fun stuff in our neighborhood that we've been watching and all that coming your way in just a moment. But first, we receive support from Dragonfly Coffee, located in Central Square Mall in Grand Rapids, featuring a scratch bakery and offering espresso, bubble tea, and more, empowering inclusion and community through employment, special orders available, and more at drinkdragonfly.com. And programming is supported by North in Bloom, located in downtown Grand Rapids, providing floral arrangements for all occasions and holidays throughout the year. Also offering wedding consultations, flower subscriptions, and gift sets. More information at northinbloom.com.
Current conditions, we are seeing mostly sunny or sunny skies in Brainerd at 58 degrees, Grand Rapids at 58, mostly cloudy, 55 in Hibbing right now, 54 in Bemidji, Aiken at 58, and Bagley reporting 54 degrees. Looks like we'll get near 70 for our day with southwest winds 5 to 10, gusting up to 20, Mostly clear overnight with lows 47 to 52 degrees and looking a little warmer in the next few days, mid to upper 70s for tomorrow, Wednesday, Thursday, 80 to 85.
It's summertime. Mm-hmm. Get out and enjoy it. I took a lap in the pit on Sunday afternoon, and there were people all over the place. Everybody was on their dock or in the lake, and it was just a delightful day. Dog and I swam a lap and just had more fun. Lots of people to talk to. Wasn't fast. Kind of one of those days when, you know, you think you're going to go out for a bike ride or you're going out for a run, and the first thing you do is you run into somebody, and then you stop and chat a little bit, and then you run a little bit more, and you stop and chat a little bit. Well, that's what happened to me. I stopped about four or five times on the way around and just chatted with some people that were hanging out in the water. Lovely. I look forward to more.
Some things going on in our region. Happy Dancing Turtle has an open house at Hunt Utilities Group Resilient Living Campus in Pine River. That is Thursday from 5:30 to 7. Visit with staff, see their outdoor classrooms, garden, and shop featuring hydronic systems and more. And the Northern Light Opera Company is presenting Cabaret at the Armory Arts and Events Center in Park Rapids now through August 8th. Recommended for ages 12 and up. Find tickets and showtimes, parkrapidsarmory.org.
If you get a chance, go to visit that Happy Dancing Turtle exhibit. Those people are cutting edge in terms of building sustainable living spaces. And they have tried a whole series of different styles, and they can tell you about the pros and cons of most of them. And they're very, very interesting people. I highly recommend that if you are in the area, you check out Happy Dancing Turtle. They are astonishing. That's all I can say. I wish I had that sort of a site that I could have gone to back in 1979 when I started building my house. I would have been well suited to have learned from them. They have a lot to teach and really have some terrific ideas about how to make your house sustainable over the long haul. Kind of neat. Support comes from Friends of the Rice Lake National Wildlife Refuge near McGregor, offering 18,000 acres of woods, water, and wildlife for the public to experience. Located 5 miles south of McGregor on Highway 65, learn more about Friends of Rice Lake National Wildlife Refuge events and activities on Facebook.
You can learn more about Minnesota scientific and natural areas during a program at Itasca State Park this Friday at 6 p.m. You meet at the amphitheater in the picnic grounds to learn what the program does and where you can go within the state to discover unique species and geologic features.
It's time for the Phenology Show. Phenology is the rhythmic, biological nature of events as they relate to climate. Simply put, whatever the weather and the climate are bringing you will have an effect on all of the critters that you're hanging out with. And this is a good time of year to observe some of those critters. We had a neat little picture of a fox helping itself to raspberries, and that is one of the things that happens. Just going over some of the August events that take place. First of all, lots of fruits and nuts are going to come ripe in August, including raspberries. Blackberries will ripen this month. Crab apples will ripen this month. Choke cherries are right on the verge of being ripe right now if you are a choke cherry fan. White oak, the bur oak acorns will become fully developed this month. And I think for a lot of you, hazel will become, the nuts of the hazel will become ripe this month during August. And in terms of hazel, you may be looking at them. If you have been looking at them, you will see that it is a pretty good year for hazelnuts. And we're going to have a pretty bountiful harvest of them if we can get them before the deer and the bears and the squirrels and the woodchucks and the chipmunks and just about every animal out there will be after them. And the amazing thing is that it takes them less than a week to completely remove the crop. And sometimes it's only a day or two. Once they are ripe, they are gone that fast. So keep an eye on your hazelnuts. You may want to harvest them a day early. I know in my own experience, there have come years when I thought, ooh, tomorrow's the day. And I go tomorrow and it's a day late. They have already disappeared. And lest you think this is something new, they have been doing this forever, and it is a common note among naturalists going way back that the hazelnuts, once they are ripe, poof, they're gone. So fruits and nuts coming in August. Also in August, the asters and the goldenrods really begin to bloom, and you will hear in my notes about some of those asters and goldenrods that are just starting to bloom right now and will be blooming through the whole month of August and into September. Also, this is the month when we will start to see our first signs of fall, and that includes things like black bindweed, black ash, balsam poplar, smooth sumac, and also the spreading dogbane and common milkweed. All of these plants are going to start showing you their fall colors. Now, whether or not they get to full fall color during the month of August, that remains to be seen. But all of them will show some signs of what is coming. And probably most obvious of all of them are that sometime during the month, and it's typically just about the third week in August, I think my average is the 18th, 19th of August, first maple leaves will be seen beginning to change color. That's going to happen, as I said, right around the third week in August. So watch for that. Also, migrants. The following birds are going to disappear during the month of August. Not disappear, but they're going to leave northern Minnesota, including rose-breasted grosbeaks, orioles. The male hummingbirds will be leaving right around the 15th of the month. One of the really spectacular fall events is the migration of nighthawks. And that typically happens, the average date is the 24th of August, but it can happen anytime during the month. You just need to be alert and aware. You might be in a spot where a flock of them will descend and do some quick feeding right at dusk, and then disappear. And that will be the end of the nighthawks until next spring when they return again. But their moment, the one noticeable thing about the nighthawks is that they gather into these large flocks for migrating south. I don't see large flocks of nighthawks coming in the spring. And maybe it's because I'm in the wrong spot. Maybe it's because they do it at night. I don't know. But I do know that in the fall, and it'll be later part of August, there we will start to see flocks of nighthawks moving south. So keep an eye out for those as well. That is sort of a brief overview of what will happen in this next coming month. Right now, looking around my yard on my phenology hikes this past week, I saw white admiral butterflies. I saw I did not see a Compton's tortoise shell, but I had moments when I was doing a little reading, and I came across a newspaper article about the Compton's tortoiseshell cousin in California called the California tortoiseshell. Now, the Compton's and the California and the local Milbert's tortoiseshell, all three of those overwinter as adults. In California right now, there is a huge migration of California tortoiseshells up the mountains. And recent wildfires have cleared land in California. And one of the first plants to come back after a fire in those areas is lilac. And lilac is the host plant for the California tortoiseshell butterfly. And so there are lots of these butterflies this year, lots and lots and lots of them. And hundreds of thousands of them are migrating up the mountains into cooler areas. And people are remarking it's a bit like the migration of the monarch butterfly. But this is a seasonal migration. So these California tortoiseshell butterflies fly up the mountains this time of year, and in the fall, as things begin to cool off, they will fly down the mountain, and in the valleys, they will find their place and spend the winter estivating, hibernating, as they await spring. So, interesting kind of a feature going on out in California with a relative of our Compton's tortoiseshell, the California tortoiseshell butterfly. I have found in my woods another Appalachian-eyed brown butterfly. This is we are at the extreme western edge of their range. And last year I found the Appalachian-eyed brown. And again this year I have discovered it. And the difference between this and the normal eyed brown that we have regularly here is very subtle, and you need to, in my case, I got a really good clear picture of its wing and was able to then trace out the things that make it Appalachian eyed brown and not just the eyed brown from this area. Still a few ebony jewel wing damsel flies around. These are large damselflies with jet black wings, and they are typically this time of year you would see the last of them, and there would have been a point during the year when there had been lots of them, but this year they had a really poor year. I did not see very many at all. The one thing I am seeing a lot of in terms of butterflies are monarchs. Boy, have we got a crop of monarchs, both the butterflies and caterpillars. I have caterpillars all over my plants, and I have butterflies visiting all the time. So it really looks like a rebound year for monarchs, and that will be good news all the way around. Some of the plants that I was looking at this past week for fruits include raspberry, roundleaf dogwood, pagoda dogwood, choke cherry, pin cherry, and nannyberry. Nannyberry, pagoda dogwood, and roundleaf dogwood. Well, the roundleaf dogwood and the nannyberry are still completely green. Don't look like they're going anywhere right now. The pagoda dogwoods, about half of the fruits on the pagoda dogwoods are they're dark blue, which to me says they're ripe, but it's not a plant you want to eat the berry of. Not harmful, but not very tasty. They are predominantly food for bears, so leave the pagoda dogwood berries for the bears. Choke cherries are right on the verge of ripening. Pin cherries are past their prime. My driveway was littered with red dots. It looked like my driveway had the measles. Red pin cherries laying on the driveway everywhere, so they're doing their final thing and getting ready for the end of the season. Among the flowers that are either in bloom or about to bloom, Compton's skullcap is probably at its peak. Flat-topped aster and goldenrod are both flat-topped aster and flat-topped goldenrod are both in bloom right now. Among the other goldenrods, Canada goldenrod, tall goldenrod, and gray goldenrod are all blooming right now. I've got one Canada and a lot of, no, I've got one tall and a lot of Canada goldenrods that are blooming, and the gray goldenrods just began to bloom. The gray goldenrod is pretty easily discerned because the flower head is kind of compact, usually not more than an inch, maybe an inch and a half in diameter, and about 4 or 5 inches tall with a slight bend to it. So hold up your index finger and just bend it very slightly. And that's essentially the shape and very nearly the size. I mean, a little bit bigger than your index finger. But basically, that's a pretty good judge of what the flower of the gray goldenrod looks like. South thistle is blooming. South thistle is this dandelion-like flower, but it's usually 4 or 5 feet in the air, bright yellow. The leaf looks like a thistle. It's lobed and cut like a thistle leaf, and it has these little prickers on the ends, though they are quite weak. There, it's not at all like messing with a thistle. It's quite gentle. Rough hawkweed is blooming. A plant called tall blue lettuce is in bloom. The tall blue lettuce has a leaf much like the thistle leaf, much like the leaf of the south thistle. It's lobed with little points on it. Again, not very aggressive. The flower itself is a bit like an aster. It's a rayed flower, but it seldom opens up wide. It's more of a tuft of blue, kind of closed. The bracts seem to hold it closed, and it has this little blue fringe at the top. Think of this little green object, roughly half the size of a pencil eraser, kind of small and with a blue top on it. That is the tall blue lettuce. And those rascals, they grow from seed every year. And I have some that are over 9 feet tall. They are huge and have to be pulled over in order to look at the flowers on them. Jewelweed, spotted touch-me-not, that plant is in full bloom, probably peak of bloom right now. Bright orange trumpet-shaped flowers, easy to spot. You'll find jewelweed just about any place you've got a little bit of water. Let's see. Common skullcap is blooming, probably near its peak. Also, hemp nettle is blooming, probably near its peak. Horseweed began to bloom this week. Tansy is probably at its peak of flower. Fireweed is at its peak of flower. Cup plant, which is a rare plant, not one that you're likely to have. I got mine from Rick Thoyne, and mine are doing really well. I'm sure Rick's are doing the same. Mine are budded but not yet flowering. The other plant that I wanted to make, black bindweed. I talked about it a week or two ago, said it was probably at its peak of bloom. I saw the first leaves changing to red on the black bindweed. Once it blooms, it sort of says, I'm done. Now, black bindweed is a vining plant, so it's growing. It's going to spiral up some structure that will hold it up. It could be another flower. It could be something like hazel. It can be just about anything that this black bindweed will grow up near and quickly colonize and use it as a structure to support itself. The leaves are fairly small and kind of arrowhead-shaped, and they are now just beginning to turn red, and that is probably the first of the leaves that are turning red for the fall. Among the birds, the crows and ravens and kestrels are all out on the newly mown hayfields, and they are doing their picking off a lot of insects there. Sandhill cranes are out walking around on that area. They are not They are without a colt this year. I don't believe the pair by my house did not have a successful effort to raise a young, because I've seen them several times and I have not seen the young one with them at all. And finally, two things. Crows and starlings both have been sort of assembling into flocks. I saw my first large flock of starlings, and my crow flock is just getting together. There are about 10, maybe 15 of them in a group, and it won't be very long, and that number will swell to 50 and then to 100, and then migrations will start. All of that's going to come probably in September. That's the Phenology Show for this week. Lots of things to cover. I hope that you can get out and enjoy many of these springtime, late summer observations.
If you're just tuning in, or you know someone who wants to listen to the Phenology Show each week, you can get it at our website, kexc.org, or through the Season Watch podcast. You should sign up through your usual podcast platforms, Apple, Spotify, those sort of things, and you'll get 2 a week of nature conversations and interesting stuff going on. So help us out by signing up for the Season Watch podcast. Help yourself out. Going to be a lot of fun. I'm Heidi Holton with John Latimer. We've got best wishes coming up next, but we heard from Susan from Cotton, Chico, her dog, and I are definitely noticing the waning of the light during our first walks, which is about 5 o'clock in the morning. I am back to wearing my headlamp, much to the concern of the leopard frog we startled on our way to the river. Second walks yesterday, we saw a big 6 to 8 point buck cross the river. Chico wants to make friends, but I insisted he stay with me. We both love KEXE. He notices when you say his name.
Well, good morning, Chico. You're a good dog. Susan, always nice to hear from you. Thanks. I agree. I was up this morning at 5, and it was, I could see my way around, but if I had encountered a leopard frog this morning at 5 a.m., I don't know that I would have seen him. He would have had to jump pretty high for me to catch him. Yeah. And we've got a few more we will be covering right after our best wishes. But right now, I think it's time for our best wishes, and we do our best to wish our friends and neighbors happy birthday and happy anniversary. And for today, August 4th, Aaron and Christina Brown are celebrating their 26th anniversary, and I would wish them both a happy anniversary to longtime supporters of this radio service and very, very wonderful parents and people. Their children have helped me immensely, both George and Henry.
Where are you, Doug? You didn't help John out.
Yeah, what happened to Doug? Doug has other interests,
right.
And that's okay. But George and Henry both were instrumental in helping me for a long time, and I thank them. It is also the birthday of a good friend of mine, Brad Fishnet. Brad is 73 today and lives in Grand Rapids. I can't believe how many good friends I have in this list. Dan Hansen, 71 today. Dan, happy birthday, and thank you for all you've done for the radio service and for me. Dan was a soil scientist with the Department of Natural Resources and went out of his way to make me smarter. And that's our job. Not that I'm so smart that I can't learn. It's that I'm not that smart. And guys like Dan took the time to explain it in a way that I could understand. Thank you, Dan. Elsie Roberts is having a birthday today. Elsie is 13. And I don't know if I've met Elsie or not, but if Elsie goes to Cohasset School, I have. And I met a young boy last night at a program that I did, and he had me and his third grade class with one of the teachers in Grand Rapids. And so that was pretty cool. Happy birthday, Elsie. My sister Anne is 72 today. Happy birthday, Annie. And I would remind you that I'm your older brother, and you should pay attention to what I'm telling you. Not that she will, but, you know, it's worth a try. Also today, Opal Anderson is celebrating her 17th birthday. Opal, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday and happy anniversary to all of you. And thank you for using KAXE to spread your best wishes.
And we just got a text in for best wishes. Happy 25th anniversary to Nate and Thea in Bemidji.
Ah,
thanks for getting that in. We're going to take a listen now to our album of the week. It's by Shannon Lay. It's called Pass the Veil. California singer-songwriter. This is her fifth studio album. She is a second-generation Irish-American. Her singing style draws from Celtic and British Isles folk music. That's our album of the week. And then what happened to the frog, John? Sorry. He was just telling me a story. The album of the week is Shannon Lay, and we heard the song called Honest Man. So let us know what you think, and you can find out more information at kaxe.org.
Let us know if you find that guy. Yeah, I've always said, you know, if my lips are moving, I'm lying. So I was telling you a story. You were telling me a story about mowing the lawn and little frogs getting out of the way.
Yeah.
And Chicago has a liars contest every year. And one year, the winning lie was about a man who was mowing his lawn, and he saw a frog, and he was feeling kind of mean, and he shoved his lawnmower over the top of the frog and thought he'd see the frog come flying out the side. Nothing happened. He pulls back, and there's the frog right where he left it. He's so mad, he takes his wheels and he lowers the lawnmower right down to the ground, and he's going to get that frog, and he shoves it back over the frog, and no guts come out. And so he gets down and he looks in the side, and every time the blade came around, the frog hopped over it.
Ah.
So that's the story. That's the lie that he told. Fast frog.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope that that frog, you know, the one that you tried not to mow over.
Yeah.
Had the good sense to either jump the blade or do like mine do, which is to hunker down in the grass.
Yeah.
They just dig themselves down low and then the mower goes right over them. But I mow pretty tall.
Yeah.
I think mine is set at 4 inches, so.
Okay. But hopefully I didn't.
On the other side, yeah. The other side is I never mow my lawn until, you know, I tell people I don't mow my lawn until I can't see the dog and I have a black lab, so. I've mowed my lawn twice this year. I'll have to mow it again sometime. I'm not sure when.
Yeah, I think that was my third or fourth. And now it'll taper off quite a bit. Yeah, maybe one more. Who knows? We'll see. You're listening to the Tuesday Morning Show. Thanks for tuning in today. It is 7:51, and we want to make sure we thank our business supporters like Timberlake Restaurant in Grand Rapids. Featuring PK Mayo Monday, August 10th as part of the Martini Monday Music Series, 5 to 8 p.m. Reservations available 218-326-2600.
If you've been listening a while, you may have heard me say some nice words about Happy Dancing Turtle, a nonprofit organization dedicated to growing stewards through education, programs, and experiences. More information is available at happydancingturtle.org. They are having an open house this week, and it would behoove you to go if you were in the area. They are an excellent organization.
Thursday night, yeah.
Yep, Thursday night.
In Pine River.
5:30 to 7, I recall, something like that.
Call us if you need more information, 218-326-1234. That is also the number to call or to text it and let us know what you are seeing. We love hearing from you.
Support for KAXE comes from the Grand Rapids Area Community Foundation, building a stronger community by mobilizing generosity around the needs of the people in the greater Itasca area. For more than 30 years, the foundation has awarded over $30 million in grants and scholarships, creating lasting local impact. Learn more at gracf.org.
Green Cheese Picnic is this Saturday, August 8th, in KEXE's backyard in Grand Rapids. You can bring a dish to share, your favorite beverage, and your own chair. The fun starts at 5 with live green cheese trivia from 7 to 9. Bring your own trivia questions, too, and at the end of the evening, we'll crown a new king and queen of green cheese.
We receive support from the Northland Foundation, working within Northeast Minnesota, offering grants, small business supports, and programs to help people and communities, working toward a future where everyone feels they belong and can thrive. More at northlandfdn.org. It's time to go back to our last few talkbacks, and our first one is a video that is it available online? I don't know, but
available
at any
on my
rate,
phone, so.
we got a note from Cara from Reamer, and she texted us a video of a fox that was eating wild raspberries right in their yard. And this may seem unusual, but it is not. My dogs have all eaten raspberries, all. Every one of them.
Wow.
And when they find them, they eat them. I was on a walk with my dog yesterday, and she was eating raspberries. But then so was I, so I couldn't really point my finger and say, you're eating all the raspberries. She was, yeah, we like raspberries. And our question of the week is, you know, what's your favorite way to enjoy berries, to pick berries? And I'm with the dog. I pick them and eat them. I'm with the bears. Pick them, eat them, move on, find more. At any rate, that was a nice note from Kara, and the video is great. The fox is eating and then looking and checking. Am I okay here? But yeah, having a lot of fun. And then this note from, is this from Julia?
Mm-hmm.
Our new neighbors moved into an older house and promptly had a bunch of kids. They're talking about, they've got a robin's nest tucked into the log siding on their house. And she says, I've been a real Gladys Kravitz.
You know what that means?
No, I do not.
Oh, it's from Bewitched, the TV show. Gladys Kravitz was the nosy neighbor.
Huh. You know, I should have known that.
I used to call Randy McCarty Gladys Kravitz.
Well, it's not a person I was familiar with, but I assumed, you know, I've been a real Gladys Kravitz with a cell phone zoom lens instead of binoculars, watching the parents leave for groceries and observing the comings and goings. Yeah, we are working around the nest, but I do wonder if it's too late in the season for robin chicks to establish before winter. The answer is no, it's not. I once had a robin that raised four broods in a single nest in my garage, and the fourth brood was right around now, right around August, and she just turned them out as fast as she could. Once they were fledged, she was on to another batch, so she did a good job. I would say, Julia, do not worry. Those babies will do just fine. And our final note, a couple of natives enjoying the coneflowers. This is from Scott down in Noke Lake near Brainerd. And he has a lovely picture of some coneflowers. And on one of the coneflowers is a lovely black swallowtail butterfly, of which I have seen a couple in my life, but not very many. Occasionally they get this far north, but Scott was lucky enough to catch one on his coneflowers, and right beside it on the next coneflower, a lovely bumblebee having dinner as well. So thanks, Scott, for sharing that. Thank you all for your notes and observations. We do love to hear from you. It is the great pleasure of Tuesday mornings is to see and hear what other people are seeing and hearing.
We just heard from Deb from Grand Rapids saying, John mentioned orioles would be leaving soon. They visited my house quite frequently earlier this summer, but not lately. Can you ask John if I should put out the oranges and grape jelly again?
My experience has been not. I mean, they just don't seem to... After that initial flush in the spring at my house, they just stopped coming. And I stopped putting out the stuff because it just rots out there. That is not true in every case because one year I actually had the mother and the father bringing babies to the jelly, but only once.
Hmm.
Some people get them every year and are blessed with that, but others of us just have no luck. And if they are not coming now, chances are they're not going to be finding any grape jelly you might put out. Although, where's the harm, you know? Put a small dish out and see what happens. If if nothing else, the bumblebees and the hornets will have a nice meal.
Julie also texting us back saying thanks to you, John, for the information and the reassurance on the baby robins.
Oh, yeah. They'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Coming up after 8 o'clock, we bring you the big weather picture with Tornado Bob. We've got the Up North Report. And then we begin a new series on citizen scientist projects, results and opportunities in Minnesota, thanks to our producer, Mark Jacobs. We've got KEXE members and master naturalists Leanne and Ron Plinsky joining us this morning.
Programming is supported by Grand Dental Center, where doctors Lisa Johnson, Leanna McBride, and their staff provide full-service family dental care for patients of all ages in Grand Rapids and surrounding communities. More information at granddentalcenter.com. And we receive support from Edward Jones Financial Advisor Christina Clark, helping individuals and business owners reach their financial goals. More information at edwardjones.com. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Palisade Riverfest is this Saturday, August 8th. Activities include an artisan and farmer's market from 10 to 3, a parade at noon, plus a duck race, pickleball, cornhole, and live music. And the 42nd Annual Threshing and Antique Show is at the Blackberry Farm. That's August 8th and 9th from 9 to 4 each day, with live music, antique tractors, shingle making, barrel making, as well as farm